We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get access to all of our news analysis, mock drafts, extra podcasts every week, and so much more. Make sure you're signed up to that today. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. You can access that at NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. Welcome back to another episode of NewOrleans.football presented by PJ's Coffee. We're at their location right now, 2600 Airline Drive in Metairie, right across the street from Unnamed Grocery Store. Make sure you check them out there. Beautiful new location. They got great coffee, great pastries, everything else. And if you need a new car, make sure you check out my guy, Matt Bowers, at one of his many dealerships throughout the region. Best cars, best customer care, best prices. They'll take care of you. Tell them that NOF sent you. We got a great show for you guys today. We're going to go through the day three picks of the Saints since 2015. Talk about the hits, talk about the misses, talk about why they hit and why they missed. And we're going to do a film breakdown of Fuaga. So stick around for that after the first break. Let's get into the show. The New Orleans Dot Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Ponchatoula strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Dot Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Friend & Company is the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans. Make sure you go down there and check them out. Get a ring from their new engagement salon. They have a beautiful selection, beautiful new room, really great prices, stones in all different sizes. Whatever you need, they'll be able to take care of you for. And while you're there, check out their Florida Lee necklace and earring that you see on the screen. The earrings are priced at $1,100. The necklace is $1,350. And now it's time to bring in Brandon, the big stepper in the size 7, man. What do we got today?
Oh, I promise y'all I'm wearing a size 7 tug. But today we have the Saints Draft Rewind Day 3 from 2015 until now. We're wrapping up our weeks-long conversation that we've been having, going through the Saints Draft picks. We're now at Day 3. Going through rounds 4 through 7. And, you know, before we get into the year-by-year breakdown, what are y'all overall thoughts on the Saints' Day 3 performance? We'll start with Littlefoot and Nick right here.
Yeah, they do all right. They I think they've made some good picks there. They sometimes find some value. I mean, you factor in the UDFAs, they really do. You know, that's kind of where the good value comes in. I mean, there's been some major misses too. I mean, I think it's kind of up and down, but I think if you go around the league, it's probably very up and down for a lot of teams. I mean, you know, you got your Rick Leonards in there, but they're offset by, you know, you got your CJ Gardner-Johnsons, who are great picks. So I think it's kind of evens out, and I'd say they're solid. I think they're a solid Day 3 team.
Unofficially, I'm going to guess that their percentage is probably about right. David Onyemata is probably the best pick. Jordan Howden has a chance to be the best pick. Tyler Davison, there's a few in here we're going to go through. The thing that stands out to me, though, is there's only 26 of them. And just quick math, 9 years, 4 rounds, that would be 36 picks. Plus you throw in the comp picks that teams usually get. I would say on average teams should have about 40 picks in a 9-year span. Saints have had 26. They throw these picks away like they're throwing out the last candy to the trick-or-treaters, and we don't want any of this left in the house at the end of the day. It hasn't always bothered me because I think the Saints do a great job with undrafted rookies. I think they do a great job with, the first and second year pros, like the Ike Yiadom and the Ugo Amadi and the guy, you know, Lonnie Johnson Jr. and the guys that make their roster and league minimum salaries. It hasn't bothered me a lot over the years. But when it just adds up to this point, I mean, there's 1 year where they had one. There's 2 years on here where they had only one Day 3 pick. Do you think this has kind of hurt them in their team building?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, you supplement it with the UDFAs. I don't think that you're looking for contributors in this range. I think when you find them, it's good. So I don't know if I can say it's hurt their team building, but I think more swings of the bat. I mean, you got more chances to hit on someone that could be Jordan Howden. So, yeah, I mean, I think maybe giving them all away probably isn't the best strategy in the world. On the other hand, sometimes they've moved up and gotten impact players. It's tough for me to say. I would have to do like an economic impact study kind of to see like what it's done. And
I
like
think
how it's affected.
But I think a hindsight 2020 thing is we have to say yes now. I mean, the cupboard is so bare for this team, but I think it's hurt them more how they've given away first and second rounders. For sure.
All right, let's roll into these. Start off with 2015. We have Tyler Davison, Damian Swan, and Marcus Murphy.
It's not bad. This was their draft in 2015, the first year they had Jeff Ireland. They were starting a little bit of a mini rebuild year. That was the year they traded away Jimmy Graham, traded away Ben Grubbs, traded away Kenny Still. Like, I'm getting some of the years confused, but I know this was the massive trade away year where they went into that draft with about 10 picks. Tyler Davison obviously ended up having a nice career. Marcus Murphy briefly returned kicks for him. Damian Swan briefly saw some playing time. It's 3 fifth rounders and a 7th rounder. It's not too exciting. I think they traded up a little because they had 3 third rounders that year too. There's worse years on this list.
Yeah, I mean, Davis Tall I think wasn't a good pick. Davison was a hit. Swan, until he got that concussion, he was actually kind of needed at cornerback and kind of came out of nowhere and gave him, you know, relative to draft position, decent snaps. And then Murphy was solid on special teams, so. You know, I think when you're looking in the third round, getting guys that can contribute a little bit, especially 7th round, 5th round, I think it's typically a good thing. Davison was a really good pick in the 5th round, though.
Yeah, we'd like to see them do that this year. Nick's made the point a bunch that you can find that run-stopping nose tackle who's going to give you 20 snaps a game, replacing Malcolm Roach, who was an undrafted rookie, replacing Shai Tuttle, who was an undrafted rookie. Tyler Davison was a 5th round pick. I think they need to find their next version of that guy this year when they have – currently 4 5th-round picks and 2 6th-round picks.
All right, let's hop to 2016. We have David Onyemata and Daniel Lasco. What you think, big boss?
Two hits. I mean, Onyemata, obviously, I think, massive hit. Finding him and just the way they went about that scouting. And there were other teams that were on him. They beat him out to get him. I mean, I think the whole execution of that was really, really good. And then Lasco, he was good on special teams for a year, and then he got hurt and just kind of never made his way back. But, again, getting anything out of it, yeah. Round 7 pick is a hit. I know people sometimes like to look at these and count hits and misses like in the 7th round. Like, it's a tough place to get any type of contribution, and he gave him a little bit. So even if it's just for a year, that's value in the 7th round.
Yeah, Onyemata is the best pick on this list. To me, he was a top 10 for you overall in any round since 2015 when you did your – ranking 1 through 55 on the website, which I encourage people to check out. And I think he maybe even could have been higher. I mean, if you can do this in the 4th round, even that 1 year, which we're going to get to, where they traded the entire rest of their – oh, no, we're not going to get to it because it was at the end of 3rd round when they traded their entire day 3 picks to trade for Adam Trautman. That's worth it to me if you get Onyemata. This was a huge hit. Obviously, kind of fizzled a little bit. They let the Falcons take him away in free agency. But while he was here, he was essential to them being probably the best defensive line in the league for a couple of years, best run defense in the league for sure.
Yeah, as of right now, Onyemata is definitely the biggest contributor to the team so far. But let's go to 2017 with Al-Quadin Muhammad.
Yeah, a miss for them. He went on and contributed a little bit with the Colts after leaving the Saints. But for the Saints, definitely they didn't really get anything out of him. So, and this is an example. I think you could say the coverage being better. But then again, in 17, the team was so loaded that having more picks in the middle rounds, I don't know if they would even have made the team, but you would have liked them probably competing in camp. So I think to go to your early point, this is an example. You see one name up there, and it's like, damn, that's all they had?
Yeah. They did have 3 third-rounders that year, to be fair. They had Alvin Kamara, Alex Anzalone, and Trey Hendrickson in round 3 that year. They had 2 first-rounders, a 2nd-rounder. That was the year that everything they touched turned to gold. Even their afterthought 6th-round pick is still in the league, doing well for Indianapolis. I just looked him up. I remember him being a little smaller. 6'4", 250 is what he's listed at. I want to remember what he came in at when he was here. He was borderline on the verge of the not-quite Davis Toll, Caden Ellis, Zach Bond, Haole Kakaha, but yet another one where he was 250 pounds, so the Saints weren't creative enough to figure out how to use him. You kind of like have to be 260, 270 in the Saints' history, you had to be 260, 270 to carve out a role here. You really did.
Let's jump to 2018. We got some more, you know, kind of memorable names in the recent couple of years. We have Rick Leonard at offensive tackle. We got Trell Jamerson, safety. We got Cameron Moore at cornerback. Running back Boston Scott, you know, he went on to have a career in Philadelphia. And then Will Clapp, who I think is still with the Chargers. I'm not sure.
Still in the league, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Will Clapp, a great pick. The rest misses. I mean, Boston Scott, obviously, has had a career in Philadelphia. The Saints gave up on him too quick. Jamerson and Moore, both misses. Rick Leonard, absolutely on that short list of worst picks of all time for the team, was a defensive end, started playing tackle, came at late. It did not work out at all. I was surprised he even got drafted in hindsight, and then just kind of doing some reporting since then. It's a little bit surprising that he even got selected. The argument with this draft class is that the team was so loaded that there really wasn't even room for him on the roster. And I mean, that's kind of true. But still, the list of names, I don't even really think we're super competitive. But they gave up on Boston Scott way too soon. But you can make a case that Will Clapp, you know, if you really want to factor in value, I mean, that's a major hit in round 7.
Yeah, Jamerson's the kind of pick that would make a lot of teams. That is an argument for you just don't need a lot of bodies, because he actually played for 3 more teams in the NFL, lasted 3 years playing special teams, and they didn't have room for him. So that is the argument for you don't need a high volume of picks. Rick Leonard, though, I might argue you had Stephon Anthony last on your list. I might have been banging the drum for Rick Leonard. I mean,
fair.
that was a 4th-round pick that didn't make the team as a rookie.
Yeah.
That's harsh, man. Yeah. That's harsh. Yeah. Even Garrett Grayson and Ian Book didn't get cut till the next year at a position where you can't play. This is a position where they usually have 10 or 11 on the roster, and they're like, you're not one of our top 10.
There's no way to combat that point of view. Like, if someone says that, yeah, absolutely. Totally understandable.
Yeah. Now let's go to 2019. We got fan favorite C.J. Gardner-Johnson. We got Saquon Hampton, Elise Mack, and then Caden Ellis.
Yeah, I mean, two hits and two huge misses on here. I don't know if Saquon Hampton falls into that Natrell Jamerson boat where he could have, you know, made the team and played some special teams if they had more roster vacancies, but he didn't really go on to do a lot after that. Caden Ellis, obviously, he played his best football in year four, and then the Falcons signed him to a nice deal. He just made a big play against the Saints this year. C.J. Gardner-Johnson is right there next to David Onyemata as one and two best picks on this list, though. Well, Jordan Howden. There's a top three on this list.
Also, shout out to Natrell Jamerson. He was the first player I ever got to come on any version of a podcast.
Oh, nice.
So shout out to him for that. C.J., absolutely great pick. Round four, obviously, it didn't work out long term. There was issues with the contract and they were going to cut him, happened to be able to trade him. So, I mean, that's just kind of how it worked out with that one. But the value of that in round four is as good as you can get, even if it didn't make it to the second contract. And then Caden Ellis, obviously, he had the final season of his tenure here, and he made himself a great story and a great value in the seventh round. So, yeah, missing on those guys in the sixth and seventh doesn't really do anything, but two good hits here. And, I mean, it just goes to show the scouting. I think the Saints have really good scouts, and I think it does show up in some of these day three picks.
I think the fourth round should almost be a category. Not really a category. It should almost be first round, second round, third and fourth. Five, six, and seven, you're just lucky if you get a contributor. Fourth rounder is where you want to hit on an Onyemata or Gardner-Johnson, and that's a realistic expectation. When you miss in the fourth round is when you're doing damage to your team. Fifth, sixth, and seventh, at that stage of the draft, the hits and misses should count for a lot less in your whatever your grading formula.
Run the clock here for a second. I'm going to pull something up. Keep talking.
All right, well, let's go to the next year, Brandon, in the meantime, and then we'll come back.
Let's hit the chosen one in 2020, Tommy Stevens.
So what they really did this year and what it needs to be judged on is Adam Trautman. At the end of round three, they traded up to get an extra pick. They traded their fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh. The entire day three of their draft, a mini Ricky Williams trade for Adam Trautman that year, who we should almost put his name on this list because that's what they did with all their day three picks that year, as I said. Like an experiment. What if we maxed out the value of all these picks and turned it into one player as Adam Trautman? I liked it at the time because I thought Trautman was going to be really good. He was all the rage at the Senior Bowl. There was a lot of buzz around him. That did not work out. That was not worth it. And it shows why you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then Tommy Stevens, just an immortal pick in the seventh round. They had no picks that day. The draft lasts, what, 8-10 hours that day? And it feels like, well, the Saints are just not going to participate today. Well, they got bored, and they got excited about trading up for Tommy Stevens. They beat the Carolina Panthers to him after they heard the Panthers were going to sign him as an undrafted free agent. They were very proud of themselves, and then he didn't even make the team. And the immortality of that story landed him second to last on Nick's list of the best and worst draft picks of the last 9 years.
The whole story, the leaking it out, the pounding of the chest, outsmarting it, it just makes it just – it's just absolutely ridiculous.
And when you think about it, there were probably 31 other teams where he had a better chance to make the team than the one team that already has Taysom Hill. They only give Taysom Hill like 7 snaps a game. Why would they think they needed two of them?
All right. So going back to what we were talking about, what they're looking for in each one of these rounds, like it's so in round one, the top half of the round one, immediate impact player, rare college player, no limitations. Middle of the first round, first year NFL starter will make an impact early. And then end of the first round, NFL starter, if need exists, contributes early. Second round, first year starter ability, but might need time to develop, will contribute as a rookie. And the third round, they're looking for somebody with the ability to start, but could be a good initial backup or a good nickel player. Fourth round, very good backup / contributor, could spot start, has special quality and upside. Fifth round, solid backup, some potential to develop, has a defined role on special teams. Sixth round, can make it as a backup / special teamer, fair long range potential to start. Seventh round, make it in the right situation as a backup or special teamer, has some ability to develop, but probably looking to replace. So that's kind of the criteria there. So, I mean, like Onyemata and CJ are actually like even bigger hits.
Yeah,
but
for
yeah,
sure.
I mean, you are looking, as you said, you are looking for somebody that can contribute in the fourth round and then the rest of them, it's like
you see huge code. I mean, this kind of backs up what I was saying about how I think there's a big delineation between fourth round and fifth round. In fourth round, they say has special quality and upside. Fifth round, they say solid backup.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know there's is a code.
Yeah,
word.
There's a line of demarcation there.
Solid
between,
is the opposite of special.
Yeah, there's a line of demarcation between the fourth and the fifth for sure.
Let's take a rewind back to 2018. Matt in the Super Chat asks, which players taken after Rick Leonard would you have rather seen them draft? Kentavious Street, Dalton Schultz, Josh Sweat, or Chase Edmonds?
Same again?
Kentavious Street, Dalton Schultz, Josh Sweat, or Chase Edmonds?
Oh, obviously Dalton Schultz.
Yeah,
that's
where
list.
My mind went too.
He would still be their tight end right now, and he would have solved a lot of problems. There
I
you
think
go.
I think I would be a big hit right now, yeah, with this team, especially in the system that they're running. I mean, I think he's – if they would have picked him up this offseason, like if he were a free agent and they got him, I would have been excited about the acquisition. The other guys on the list would have been like, sure.
Yeah, I mean, Chase Edmonds has had a really nice career. I mean, they're obviously picking some names of guys who've gone on. I mean, Kentavious Street came here as a free agent later. And also the other 150 guys that were drafted after Rick Leonard and made their teams, those guys too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to 2021. You got Rudy, Ian Book, and then you got Landon Young, and then you got Kwon Baker.
It's a tough group. It's a tough group. I mean, Landon Young hit. Kwon had some time. I mean, the Book pick in the fourth round. I don't hate it, though. Like, I'll never crap on a team for taking a shot on somebody at quarterback in the fourth round. That's the only way you can hit. It's such a hard position to find and develop. I mean, Belichick was just saying the other day that his studies have shown him throughout time that quarterbacks are a 50-50 proposition in the first round, as are wide receivers, which – I would have never guessed that, but then you start to think about it, and there are a lot of wide receiver misses in the first round. But taking a swing at one in the fourth, obviously you'd like to see him take a swing at someone that you feel like could hit there, but they didn't, and they missed big time. So, I mean, it's obviously a huge miss, but I'm just saying I don't fault the philosophy of taking a chance on someone in the fourth round.
You know, I did a big study in my last year at ESPN on these mid-round picks because it's always been such a big topic. Why didn't the Saints, in all those years that they had Drew Brees, why didn't they draft a guy in round three or four, let him spend a couple years on the bench, develop him, train him, and then he can become the replacement? It seems so obvious, and yet it never happens anywhere in the NFL. There has been a Russell Wilson. There has been a Dak Prescott. There has been a Tony Romo. There has been a Tom Brady. There has been a Brock Purdy. But when you look through the list, after those, like, five, you quickly get to Trevor Siemian. You don't even get to, like, 10 good names. And there are very, very few examples of guys who – like, sometimes there was just a special guy, and when he got in the door, he won the job, like Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson. There's very few examples of a guy who ever, like, got the job in year three after a couple years of developing. Yeah. And the two main reasons that we hit on is teams just are not good at developing third-string quarterbacks. They don't put the time into them. And the other one is guys getting drafted in round three and four are really seventh-round talents, because the guys who should be getting drafted in round three and round four are getting drafted in round one. Yeah. And it's just this ladder effect that – the guys getting drafted in round four, probably guys who should have seventh round grades on them, was one of the conclusions that was reached. But you're right, you don't find Dak Prescott and you don't find Brock Purdy if you don't take a couple of swings. So
yeah, and even if he in Book becomes a backup though, then you got a backup for $500,000 or whatever it is, as opposed to having to spend $10 billion, which is the price now. So yeah. I mean,
we're seeing it with Jay Kaner right now. Yeah.
I think it's always worth it. And yeah, I mean, you don't strike gold unless you look for gold, and you probably aren't going to find gold if you do go looking for gold. But if you don't go look at all, you're never going to have it. And if I'd rather miss on Ian Book than Rick Leonard, or but the flip side is you don't get C.J. Gardner-Johnson if you're taking Ian Book. But I just don't. I'll never disparage it. I think it's just such a difficult thing that if you burn 9 fourth round picks and on the 10th one you hit, I mean, it's the biggest cheat code of all time. So it's just I'm not against it all. I mean,
I'm really curious about what a team's responsibility should be though to develop a guy like that. Like, I think we're going to see the Saints give Jay Kaner a real chance to have a Chase Daniel like career, which would make it worth it. But when you're like, no, we're trying to win right now, that's when you go out and sign Jameis Winston, you go out and sign Andy Dalton, and then all of a sudden this guy becomes your third stringer, and just nobody's working with him. Like, I don't know what the right answer is, but these guys, there's no way that you gave Ian Book the full chance if you cut him the next summer. You just decided we don't have time to develop and we're trying to win. And and I think a lot of teams think that way. I really do.
The thing with quarterbacks, though, is I truly believe – I think you can kind of see it right away.
Probably.
Like, it's not
true.
Something – Every now and then there's somebody that's like slow developing, but typically there's something within the first few days of watching him, you're like, he has something. And I don't know if Jake Haener will develop, but with him watching him a few times, it was like, he has more than anybody else who's been here.
That's true.
And he got into the preseason. I don't think his preseason performance was outstanding. You're also playing with third stringers. But I think with Ian Book and Garrett Grayson and even Taysom Hill, Taysom ended up being a lot better. But those early camps, it was like, these guys are not going to be starting quarterbacks. Like, you just kind of knew it right away. And, you know, I think they probably got to a place with Ian Book and they saw it and they're like, he's not going to be it. And, you know, I think that was someone that Sean liked too. And then Sean leaves and there's probably a different feeling about him, maybe with other people on the staff.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, I'm okay with it though. And like you said, it's rare. It's incredibly rare. It's even rare to hit in the first five picks on a quarterback though, too. So
it's true.
It's just a very hard position. But I'll never disparage them. But obviously, they got this one way wrong.
Let's hop to 2022 with DeMarco Jackson and Jordan Jackson.
Jury's still out a little bit on DeMarco Jackson because he was hurt and he lost his whole rookie year. And then last year, briefly contributed, got a lot of special teams work. So we'll see if we're going to start talking about him in the late bloomer Caden Ellis category. It's hard to bet on that. But Jordan Jackson, a huge miss. I think they let him stick around for the whole year on the practice squad before. They didn't even sign him to a reserve future contract. Sean Payton picked him up in Denver, though. So obviously whatever part of the organization liked him was part of the coaching or scouting department that moved to Denver.
Yeah, well, let's rock to 2023. We got people on the roster right now. Nick Saldivari on the offensive line, quarterback Jake Haener, safety Jordan Howden, and wide receiver A.T. Perry.
I think we can say kind of confidently that they hit at some level on 5 and 6 there. Jordan Howden obviously got snaps last year. A.T. Perry looked decent in his time, even 200 yards. You know, it was a good 200 yards, though. Hainer's going to have a chance to be the backup quarterback. So it seems like a decent slot of players here, and we both, I think, kind of have reserved optimism for Nick Saldivari. But we don't really know about this class yet. We're going to see how far it goes. But it looks like that they found at least two contributors with Howden and Perry.
I think you've like sparked a little optimism on Nick Saldivari. I'm a little more pessimistic on him because I can't believe that he didn't show them enough to get some sort of opportunity last year before he got hurt because the need was so great. But the opportunity is absolutely going to be there for all these guys. I mean, Saldivari and Haener are going to have opportunities that we haven't seen young guys get in a long time around here. So if they end up with four hits here, this is going to be the best of this whole group that we looked at.
All right, continuing this conversation just further down the line, we have our next segment bought by Hard High Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey. We couldn't finish this exercise without talking about some, you know, of the UDFAs that the Saints have hit on in recent years. There's a lot of guys dating back to the Sean Payton era. But who do you think were the very best that stand out as UDFAs? Of course, you got people like Rashid Shaheed, but who do y'all think since 2015 have been some of the best?
That's the first name that popped in my mind was Shaheed and Deontay Harris at the time they grabbed him. I mean, this has been a huge success for the Saints, and it's part of the reason probably why they don't put as much value into having great volume numbers of draft picks on day three. But I think those guys take a backseat to Carl Granderson. I mean, defensive line, the only reason we're not talking about that at the same crisis point we're talking about offensive line is kind of because he's developed into a good starter for them. They just re-signed him to a contract worth $13 million a year. I think he's more of a number two defensive end than an elite number one defensive end. Mm-hmm. But you get that out of an undrafted rookie. Obviously, he would have been drafted higher. He had some off-the-field issues that the Saints had to investigate and feel comfortable with when they signed him and spent time kind of patiently waiting for him to develop. But that's the biggest hit on this list for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just hit on the top, probably two of the top three for me, Granderson, Shaheed. I think Hardy's obviously in there too. I think then kind of going down the list just to you know, number four probably, I think Ken Crawley is up there.
I knew you were going to mention him.
I mean, look, he was key to that 17 season.
He really was.
And he kind of rode the wave, and it was maybe fool's gold, but fool's gold kind of got him to where they needed to go.
He kind of caught it in a bottle for 1 year. And never recaptured it again after that. But
I've heard things about how the offseason between 17 and 18 was spent, and I think
Okay.
Maybe if it was a little bit different, it would have turned out a little bit different. I think JT Gray's one on there. You want to keep with the special teamers. Justin Hardy's another one.
No question.
They've had some guys too. Roach had a chance to be on there. Brandon Coleman was a good player for a little bit. There's a bunch of them.
Well, we skipped over an obvious name too that I think.
Juwan Johnson
is probably a candidate too. And the book is still out on him. A year ago. Mm. He would have had a chance to be number one on our list before Granderson and Shahid had much better years. So Johnson still has a chance to be in their category for sure.
Yeah, if I had to pop off a top three, I'd say, of course, Rasheed. Then I would actually go Juwan. And then from contribution standpoint for the years that he was here, Deontay Hardy has to be on the list too. We're going to hit a quick break, and then we'll be right back after this.
Shrimp remoulade combos are back at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Zesty shrimp remoulade served with fried shrimp, catfish, or softshell crab starting at $10.99. Or try one of our spring specials, catfish Lafitte, or lemon caperfish with crab meat now at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family-owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Yes.
Welcome back to 2600 Airline Drive. We're getting into our next segment brought by Jouet Productions. We got Nick back on the iPad talking about a lot about what these offensive tackles have shown through their college careers, and then we're going to break them down. Today we're going to start with Oregon State's Talicia Fuaga.
Yeah, great player. We're going to just play this YouTube video we found up there with just some different highlights. He's number 75 on your screen, and I think just the thing that you can just look at right away is just the size and athleticism that he brings to the field. I mean, he is just a mountain of a man out there playing right tackle. That's where he was last season for them. And I think that's probably where he best projects in the NFL. I don't know that he has necessarily that with the traits you want to be a tremendous left tackle, but he's really good on the right side. And he ultimately might end up being better as a guard, but he's really good. Just look at the way he moves in the run game, and you see these zone schemes here, which kind of makes him a little bit more projectable to what the Saints are looking to do. And just he just gets out there, and he's just a nasty guy. Like, you see him just getting a guy with one arm there, just a ton of strength, just gets that arm in his chest, and he's just kind of a killer. And then he moves well on his feet. He drops. He just does everything kind of really well. And, I mean, he has exceptional ability to kind of bend, and just, you know, he just moves really, really well for his size, and the strength is just kind of one of the incredible things. You know, for me, I think he's probably number two on my list behind. Well, I mean, Joe Alt's obviously number one. And then I go to Fashion, who I think is the guy that I like is the best fit. But I think Fuaga is very is the next guy on that list. And then Fautanu, I think, would be the next one.
J.C. Latham.
Would be there for me. Yeah, J.C. Latham's in the mix as well. But I think that, you know, if you're asking me, I think the odds are that it's probably Fuaga or Fashanu are probably going to be the guys that are most likely to be available at 14. And I don't think you can really go wrong with either one. I like Fashanu a little bit better because I think he has a little bit more upside. And I think with Fuaga, he's kind of, you know, what you see is what you get a little bit. And I think you kind of get some of that with Joe Alt, too. I don't know that there's a ton of ceiling there left for him. I think he's probably kind of really polished and kind of about what he can be. I think what makes Fashion exciting is that you look at him and there's just a lot of abilities still there. But, I mean, I think if you get Fuaga, he's a starter day one. Look at him leading the way on this play. I like the stuff that he brings. And I think that if you get him, you're extremely happy to get him. And I think that guard tackle flex is something that is kind of valuable just given the state that they're in, yep, where you don't know kind of really what they need, who they have, or where they're going.
Well, you also made the point, and I don't think this should be the only reason they draft someone. You got to be able to project that you can coach someone and teach someone, but he is the most familiar of any of the guys you really studied in their current system, right? Like the wide zone runs and everything like that.
I mean, they all have some, but I mean, that was kind of bread and butter, kind of the thing that they were into. I think anyone can kind of pick them, but I think, the projectability.
He showed he could do it.
You know exactly what you're getting. It's probably the safest out of the two, like Fashion and him. He's considerably more safe because you look at it and you know, like, this is exactly how he fits and you see it. So it's a great point. I mean, sometimes, you know, I think every team, and what I mean by that is every year is different for every team. And sometimes I think some years you got to make the safe pick, and other years, and I'm not saying Fashion is a dangerous pick by any means, but, you know, I think there's no exact fit to it. I think it's kind of an art every year. And if you want to cut down the margin, I mean, Fuaga, I think you grab him and he looks exactly what he looks like right there, and he fits exactly how you know he's going to fit.
First of all, if you call it a safe pick, fans are going to hate it and immediately kill him for it. Although that's not necessarily true because Trevor Penny wasn't a safe pick. Peyton Turner wasn't a safe pick. But look, we're going to go over each of these guys. I agree. Joe Alt's my favorite. Fashion News my second favorite. I mean, I don't see Teron Armstead. I'm not guaranteeing that, but like, I see the athletic special left tackle in Fashion News. Fog, I think it'd be right tackle. They need both. That's not a problem. I really got interested in J.C. Latham. The things I don't know about J.C. Latham are, you know, I mean, the things that these teams have to figure out. What kind of guy is he? What kind of a, you know, how much more can you get out of him? And Fautanu, I've seen a lot of love for him. I think I like Fashanu second, Latham third, but if I had to bet money based on what I expect to happen, I think Fog is the most likely guy to end up a Saint, just because I think Fashion Who goes before they pick.
I think they'd pick Fuaga over Latham. My issue with Latham is that sometimes when you watch, and we aren't going to do a film study on him, so I'll just point out, I like so much of what he does. The one negative for him, the one thing that I would look at and it would make me say, I don't know, is that sometimes you can watch him and he looks disinterested. And sometimes you're just like, wow, like, It's a tough thing. So, I mean, you would have to kind of figure out how to reconcile that and why that was and why it looks that way and if what you're seeing actually is. Like, that's where those meetings come into play so much. But when I watch him, that's the one trait where I'm looking at him versus Fuaga. Like, I'd lower Latham just a little bit because there were just a handful of plays where you're just like, So, you know, I think that's the one thing that you would have to try to reconcile. But that's why those meetings and all that are so important.
It's unquestionably a good thing that the Saints get to have this conversation about five guys.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's going to say they reached to fill a need. Not when you're choosing between five guys. If you were convincing yourself on the one guy left, maybe, not when you have this many good choices.
Yeah, and the difference between five guys and these five guys is that they might actually get good value for it and not feel like they're overpaying like you would at the other five guys.
Nah, for sure. I mean, seeing Fuaga at the Senior Bowl, he definitely got some good reps against top talent like Latu and everything like that. But, you know, y'all make exceptionally good points, and you got to be subscribed to New Orleans Football to continue to find out their thoughts. Now, let's roll into our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand-picked, barrel-select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. First question comes from Saints Only. In all the mock drafts, y'all, New Orleans Football, have the Saints taking a punter out of Iowa. Mike's alma mater.
Yep.
Do y'all think that the Saints would actually take a punter, or is Lou Hedley still the guy?
He's the only guy we've taken in all three mocks, and I'm the driving force behind it. But, I mean, look, I honestly think that Torrey Taylor's going to go really early in this draft, like round four or round five. I mean, because I follow Iowa, I know that makes me seem biased, but I watched a horrible football team that was ranked in the top 10 and had to, like, just get embarrassed every time they got in the Big Ten championship because they only had one really special player on their team. It was their punter.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're talking – and he broke an NCAA record this year that had stood since 1938. Like, Iowa needed their punter to came through. He came through every time. The thing about Lou Hedley is the Saints – I don't think the Saints are eager to get rid of Lou Hedley. Like, we talk to people and try to be like, hey, you're going to bring Thomas Morstead back? That seems perfect. You had – a guy who was statistically, in some ways, the worst punter in the league last year in Lou Hedley. And it seems like they have a lot of confidence. They like the strides he took. Mm-hmm. My gut tells me, though, that they like the style of Lou Hedley better, that rugby style, that Aussie style. It's taken over college football. It's starting to enter the NFL. And they did. They gave up some of the fewest return yardage in the league. His punts were hard to return. They were easy to cover because guys were not returning his punts. Well, Torrey Taylor is also from Australia. He's done some of that rugby style stuff. He turned into more of a traditional style punter because he's got such a big leg. But getting somebody who can kick the same style as Lou Hedley and do it better makes so much sense to me. You have four fifth round picks, two sixth round picks. Why not use one of them on upgrading a position that so obviously needs to be upgraded?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Bring him in. Bring him in and just see what he has. You can't, you know, not saying it's not going to hurt you, but, you know, if you can get somebody who's shown themselves in college to be able to do what they need to do at a specialist position, it's not going to hurt. Just bring them in. What you think, Nick?
Yeah, I'd be okay with it. I mean, I don't know that it's going to happen, but I'd be okay with it. I mean, I think that trying to upgrade that position is definitely something that they should look into doing. Like, if it's not him, they should bring in competition somewhere else.
Well, yeah. We just talked about, we went through all the day three picks, and it's like a lot of times there's not room for a guy to make a roster. They have what they currently have, seven picks on day three. Like, yeah, use one on at a spot where you can make the roster for sure.
Yeah. Now let's roll on to our second question, brought to you by Nero CS2. Often in the mock drafts, y'all talked about taking a potential quarterback in the late rounds. What quarterback stands out to y'all the most?
Yeah, and they mentioned in that question Jordan Travis, and I like the idea of him. I mean, the injury and everything is something you'd have to consider, but it feels like maybe there's a little bit of value there, possibly. But I think the two obviously are Spencer Rattler and Michael Pratt are probably the two that you think would probably have the best chance of developing into something. Like, there's Sam Hartman and Carter Bradley and Tua's brother. I don't know that you bet on those guys as people that are going to end up, you know, they might not even get drafted, those three. Hartman probably will. But I think that if you're looking at guys that have a chance to develop and potentially catch lightning in a bottle, it's Rattler and Pratt. And obviously, like, Penix and Bo Nix are going to go well before. I don't think they're mid-round day three guys. Pratt and Rattler are the two that I would probably be most intrigued about as far as, you know, those middle-round picks.
There's also a quarterback in this year's draft class named Rocky Lombardi.
Sure.
Which,
sure.
I mean, you're just destined to be a winner. But look, yeah. I think Michael Pratt's going to have a real chance to carve out an NFL career, and that's not just homerism. I mean, I think we're going to see him get drafted in, like, the third or fourth round. Rattler is a lot more boom or bust to me, but I'm also interested in him. Jordan Travis, I agree with you. There could be value there because of the injury. You can redshirt the guy. He doesn't have to contribute right away. But just in general, and obviously Michael Penix and Bo Nix, two guys who might slip out of the first round. The one thing, I think just the volume of good quarterbacks could present a value this year. Like with guys not, like I said earlier, if you're not taking the third rounders in round one, if the four guys go early and that makes Nix and Penix slip and then that makes Rattler slip and then that makes Pratt slip, maybe there will be some value in round four or round five. So with all those day three picks, I don't hate the idea of taking a chance there either.
Cool. Yeah, I definitely think that Pratt, you know, he was able to take Tulane and completely turn them around. People know Tulane players now, and I think he was the, you know, driving force in that. You know, you got people like Jaquan Jackson who probably are going to get drafted late rounds and stuff like that. So
you're on the clock in round six. Michael Pratt or Jaquan Jackson?
Oh, who you taking? I gotta go with my come on now. Jaquan. I'm going with Jaquan. It's a little bit of bias right there. You know, me and Kwame went to high school together. But that'll do it for this episode of New Orleans.Football. Make sure you keep it locked and subscribe to New Orleans.Football for all exclusive events that we might have going on, articles that we have written, everything like that. Check you next time.